This is your captain, the Night Doctor. I thank you one more time for flying with us as we journey through time and space. Inside your mind, around your body, across society, in this world and in the next. Back into the past and forward to the future. We're traveling on the starship here in Jamaica. Call it as H-E-A-R-J-A. Crew of one. It's time once again to buckle your seatbelts and observe the no smoking sign. It's my commission to take you through the darkest part of the night, straight to dawn and into the light. My charge? To heal the mentally sick, raise the spiritually dead, and set the cultural captives free. So until 5 a.m., it's you and me. If you wish to communicate with your captain, please use the audio transmission device next to you and enter the number sequence 67615 or 62178 or 68631. As soon as we are cruising altitude, we'll be serving food as usual for your body, mind, and soul. Prepare for the most discriminating of taste. Sit back, relax, enjoy your flight this morning. Morning, our journey takes us across religious terrain, historical, social, cultural. Want to hail up some people from down in Granville. Sam Fisher, my brother, stay strong. Donald Legister, thanks for the hospitality. Folks in Ireland from Cayman, Blemo and Kelly, nice to know that that doctor is big in Cayman also. This morning, we take you across the terrain to examine the contribution of Haile Selassie to world affairs. Today is his birthday. Born 1892 as Tafari Makonnen, he was the 10th and only surviving child of Ras Makonnen of the Shoan dynasty, who traced their lineage to King Solomon of Israel and Makeda, the Queen of Sheba. Haile Selassie was his baptismal name, which later became his throne name. His childhood education was in the royal tradition. He learned Ge'ez, Amharic, and French. At the age of 8, he was ordained a deacon. He began his career in 1905 at the age of 13, when he became Dajmak, the second highest rank after Ras, and began to show his ability and disciplined character. In 1906, his father died suddenly, and Tafari was summoned with other nobles to Menelik's court in Addis Ababa to learn more about imperial practices. He became governor of Harar, his birthplace, in 1910, and in 1916 was appointed regent and heir to the throne on the deposition of Lej Iyasu. Rastafari was an energetic leader and resumed the work of modernizing Ethiopia, which was begun by Emperor Menelik II. He successfully obtained Ethiopia's admission to the League of Nations in 1923, established a printing press, a modern school and hospital, and decreed the gradual eradication of slavery in that part of Africa. In 1928, he was proclaimed Negus of Ethiopia and was publicly crowned. On the death of Empress Zawditu in 1930, Ras Tafari was crowned Emperor Haile Selassie I, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, conqueror of the tribe of Judah, root of David, elect of God. His coronation was the most colorful and majestic one recorded in the history of Ethiopia, and resulted in the submission of most of the nobility to his authority. At that point, that's where we come in the picture. It's at that point that many Africans scattered in the West recognize the significance of this man. And the Rastafari. So this morning, on his birthday, we're raising the question, evaluating the contribution of this Haile Selassie to world affairs. And even the broader question, who do you say that he is? We're almost at cruising altitude. Next 15 or so minutes, we're going to just use some music to establish a position which has been articulated by a variety of Jamaican artists looking at Haile Selassie. I want to start with Dee Brown, Muta Baruka, Anika Mose, Great Kings of Africa, where they touch on the contribution of this king. We opened with Bob Marley, very simple song, one of his few songs which appears on no album, simply states, Jah lives. Fool saying in your heart, Rasta your God is dead, but I and I know, dread, it shall be dread a dread. Your night doctor here, taking you from the darkest part of the night straight to dawn and into the light. Yes, it's now 1:30 with the night doctor. We're ready to bubble with you. King Solomon sitting on his throne, the Queen of Sheba came unto him. Instant love and Menelik was born, Solomon's firstborn son. And from that day on, the power of God moved from Jerusalem to Ethiopia. And Jah appeared unto Solomon, and he saw a great light shine, and it moved from Jerusalem to Aksum. And from that day on, the power of God moved from Jerusalem to Ethiopia. And Solomon begged Menelik to stay, but the youth's heart was set for the kingdom of Ethiopia. And Solomon ordered the Ark of the Covenant to go with him. And all firstborn sons, the chief of Israel's strength, was ordered too, to assist Menelik in his rule. And from that day on, the power of God moved from Jerusalem to the new Jerusalem. And thus the seat of David was established in Ethiopia, where the tribe of Judah rule to this day. And from that day on, the power of God moved from Jerusalem to Ethiopia and would remain there for evermore. From the Rastaman chant, written by Miguel Lorne, who will be with us later on. Rastaman chant continues, Jah is God, Ras means head, Tafari means creator, Rastafari means head creator. Haile means power, Selassie means trinity, first means first before others. Haile Selassie the first means the power of the trinity first and foremost. King of all kings, Lord of all lords, conqueror land, tribe of Judah, elect of God, earth's only ruler, praise ye him. Rhythm to Ethiopia from Terence Gadd. It's 1:34. You're with the night doctor. We're evaluating the contributions of Haile Selassie to world affairs and asking the question, who do you say that he is? So far, Bob Marley has told us that Jah lives. Muta and Dee Brown and Aini told us that he was one of the great kings of Africa. Lloydie and Wenzel Shaw on the Scorcher label told us that he's an African. And Terence Gadd just told us about Ethiopia, that when they turned their back against his majesty, suffering did not cease. In fact, it heightened. And until his majesty returns from the mountain, then one will see more suffering. One of our guests this morning is a brother by the name of Wolde Maiden. He's a deacon of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And the Ethiopian Orthodox Church establish a presence in Jamaica, subsequent to the visit of His Majesty here in 1966. Exactly when was the church established here, my brother?
On the 23rd of May, 1970.
May 23rd, 1970.
Yeah.
I see. How long have you been functioning with the church here?
Well, I've been functioning with the church over the past 19 years.
So you are clearly a significant member, a cornerstone.
Yes, I would say. Here in Jamaica.
Right, here in Jamaica. Maybe you can help us with this question.
The emphasis of his contribution more was in the Eastern world than in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
He had demonstrated his ability in organizing, in bringing all Africa into one union. At that time, you had dynamic leader as Kwame Nkrumah. They both worked together in bringing the OAU into focus.
Okay, the OAU,
Plus, I looked at when the Italians invaded Ethiopia. His approach to the Leagues of Nations then is very significant.
1934?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In that there was a pronunciation then that he came to seek justice for his defenseless people.
Yes.
And their response was nil, and he says the League was dead. And so it manifests that the Leagues came to an end, upon which the United Nations was then inaugurated.
So this was the forerunner of the United Nations?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There are other areas. One of his most outstanding contribution, I would say, is the freedom of the Ethiopian church.
Mm-hmm.
Because for over 1600 years, the Ethiopian church was bounded by law under the Church of Egypt. And it was only during the reign of His Majesty that he negotiated and even threatened that he would break, that the freedom was given, that Ethiopian church become autonomous in itself, whereby it could go out to other countries to evangelize. And this is true that the church had extended itself to us in the West.
Yes.
So these are some of the most highlighted things that I like to...
Well, we've heard other people also say that he was a despot, that he lived in luxury while the people of Ethiopia lived in poverty. I mean, what's your knowledge of that?
Well, what is called luxury and what is called poverty, in that people of the West has different opinion and views from people of the East. And as a king, as an emperor, not only a king, as an emperor, you would say that he should live in a mud hut, or he should live in a palace. In every society, you have the rich and the poor. And Ethiopia is no different.
Mm-hmm.
All Ethiopians could not live in palace. Some live in rich homes, some live in poor homes. That is how God made it. That's how it has been from...
As a regent, as a head of state, he lived in a manner, you say, depicting his status.
Exactly.
And facilitating those who were his subject.
Exactly.
Now, the second part of our question this morning, who do you say that he is? Who? As someone within the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, how do you see the personage, the existence of His Imperial Majesty?
His Majesty definitely is one of the dynamic leader of Africa and Ethiopia in particular.
Yes.
The emphasis that he is God, it's a very stiff question because the West came up with this idea. But we cannot just start with history because God is always in history. And if we are to say that His Majesty is God, then we need to go back in history. Not from our point of view in the West, but we need to go back to Ethiopian history. The church has always been in existence. And even before, his name was Lich Tafari Makonnen, before he was born from the line of his father, Rasmakonnen. The church was in operation, confessing our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. When Lichtafari Makonnen born, he came born and come and see the church in existence, confessing Christ.
Yes.
He was baptizing the church, and as you four mentioned, he was also ordained a deacon at the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a clear demonstration that he lives a Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in the church, living the life of the church. And I should point out that he was not named to the throne by Emperor Menelik II.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ligiasu who was named to the throne. But because Ligiasu tend to be siding with the Muslim religion and not the Christian religion, which is the dominant religion of the state, then it was considered that he was not the fitting ruler.
Yes.
And this is why Tafari Makonnen, or Rastafari, was then named to work along with Zaidi II, who was Emperor Menelik II's daughter. Mm-hmm. And they both ruled Ethiopia until the death of Zaidi II, then His Majesty succeeded as emperor. So, with that sort of background, you know, it is clear to see that His Majesty all his life lives a Christian. And I looked at the very last period of his existence amongst man, that the state, it is always state and church that rules the world. The state under the leadership of the army, say they overthrew him, say they remove him from his high palaces and put him in a little mud hut, as they describe it. But what the news came out to say, that every morning in that mud hut, he was receiving the body and blood of Jesus Christ from his priests. And that is very clear demonstration that he lives a total Christian life. So to say, to go beyond that, it's really outside of my means, because I'm not going with my opinion, but I want to remain with the opinion of my ancestors, which are Ethiopians.
Would we say that your perspective is a perspective also offered by the Ethiopian Orthodox Church?
Yes.
Right? So that would be in contradiction to the claim of the Rastafarians that would personify him as Christ in the flesh in the Second Advent.
We don't want to classify it as an contradiction, in that the church came into Jamaica through the good wishes of His Majesty. And I'd like to take the opportunity to point out to all Jamaica that to say Selassie, Haile Selassie, is really disrespectful for a man of his caliber, a person of his caliber, being an emperor. It is totally disrespectful for you to say Selassie, Haile Selassie. It is normal for you to, the simplest way to refer His Majesty or His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make it easier, you refer to him as His Majesty. I feel that is very respectful. Mm. And we as Jamaica Rastas and non-Rastas should come to this agreement, because he is a black emperor. He is a black leader.
Yes.
And therefore, to give him that sort of recognition and respect, we should all be willing to do it.
You say it sounds disrespectful to say Selassie.
It is Selassie first, not Selassie I. Selassie first.
Yes.
Right? But people not understanding, they say, they call it the first I.
Yes.
Selassie I. No, it is Selassie first. Haile Selassie first. It is normal. The Ethiopians do also refer to him as His Majesty.
Yes.
You know? Because then the Ethiopians respect and regard him.
Do you, from your perspective, the world was told in 1978 that His Majesty was dead.
Yeah.
Right? Even though no official funeral was ever held, mm-hmm. and no presentation was made to the world of a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
But many people have accepted that claim,
mm-hmm.
and many have not accepted
mm-hmm.
it. What is your position? Does Jah live, or is His Majesty dead?
Jah live. People are saying Marcus Garvey live.
But I believe that Garvey is alive and well.
Well, you believe
that.
But then other people will tell you, live by his mere work, that be his work continuing.
Yes.
People talking about Garvey, people trying to emulate Garvey. In this way, he lives.
Yes.
His Majesty, I doesn't look at His Majesty abstract. I look on Ethiopian society, Ethiopian culture, Ethiopian way of life. And it is a land of mysteries. And here is mysteries being performed because, as you said, some say he's dead, some say he's alive. And all who is saying, no one can prove. Those who say he's dead have no proof than what is written in the paper. Those who say alive cannot point to him where he is.
And say, there he is, and so
exactly.
On.
That's a mystery.
Either position is an act of faith. And this morning we're trying to unravel some of the mysteries, because that's indeed what it is. The mystery of the contribution of His Imperial Majesty to world affairs. And the second question, really, who do you say that he is? Some may say that he was. One thing was defined up front by our brother here, Waldemar, of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, that the early attention of the world to His Majesty was that whole 1934-35, when Italy, under the fascist dictator Benito Mussolini, El Duce, invaded Ethiopia and sought to bring Africa's only independent nation under fascist domination. Facing imminent defeat, His Majesty went to the League of Nations in 1936, after counseling with the nobility to plead Ethiopia's cause, while the army and the population continued the national resistance struggle. On June 10, 1936, His Majesty delivered his historic and prophetic speech to the League of Nations. He declared that God and history will remember your judgment. Indecision and ineffective sanctions by the European nations made it easier for the Italians. And His Majesty remained in exile in England as Italy continued her forced annihilation almost of Ethiopia. But you know that that was not possible. In 1939, Ethiopia was still under the control of Italy. World War II broke out. And in 1940, Italy entered the war by attacking France and Britain. Ethiopia was then granted Allied status, as it became necessary for Britain to defeat the Italians. The Allied army, together with the Ethiopian patriots, defeated the Italians. And on May 5, 1941, the fifth anniversary of the fascist occupation, the emperor triumphantly re-entered the capital, Addis Ababa. The Lion of Judah had prevailed once again, as was earlier in the Battle of Adowa, and when Italy tried once previously to annex.
It's more than two times. They tried to bring the state under their domination, their field. They tried to bring the church under their domination, and their field also. This is the only ancient nation, ancient in Africa, ancient in the world, and Rome as a superpower, world power, wanted to bring this nation out. But she had tried so many times and had failed. Yet, if I'm not jumping the gun, want to point out that even when His Majesty returned to Ethiopia after the invasion of Mussolini, he still went back down to Italy, visit Italy,
yes,
to show that he's not really a man of war.
Not caring feelings.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, I read in some article where he actually threatened some of his ras, some of his leader, against the expulsion and termination of the Italians that were in Ethiopia when he returned, because these ras wanted to kill them out for the wrongs they have done. And
yes,
he had to threaten them, said, no, let us show them that we are people with human heart and human conscience. It is easier for us to ask them to help us to reconstruct, rebuild what they have destroyed than to kill them.
Yes.
And these are the sort of Christian principle about His Majesty that I admire very deeply, very greatly.
We expect for there to be a certain amount of religious pluralism in Jamaica, but somehow we tend not to see it. We tend to see a certain amount of chauvinism, first of all in favor of Christianity, and then also in favor of certain specific denominations within Christianity. But what we hope to do during the course of this morning is to really examine, well, one other aspect, in the same way that around Christmas time, when Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus the Christ, we will do a program sort of looking at the elements surrounding His existence and His work. We figure it's only appropriate that on today, July 23rd, where the birth of His Imperial Majesty is celebrated, that we examine the historical facts and the circumstances surrounding his existence, we can all learn. My brother, how are you doing this morning?
Information that Jan the Bright had just relayed. What is his name again?
My brother, could you repeat your name for him, sir? Wolde Mehin?
Wolde Medin.
Huh?
Wolde Medin.
Wolde Medin?
Wolde Medin. He's a deacon in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Maxfield Avenue.
Well, the information with him just relayed, say the first many or thousands of Jamaican people really hear such information and them life and that.
Yes.
My input to the program is that I was reading up and I come across a national leader there, and his emperor speak on religion when make you know that our religion is one and unite, and next article I read about the emperor that and his coronation, his pledge or his oath was to defend Christianity to the last, and many people still don't recognize that his emperor is a Christian, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, them say Rastafari and I don't know Christianity or nothing.
Yes.
So, remember the portrait of me take Sophie around 2 months ago, Christ returned.
Yes.
And if you read in fear, it's back still, but
no, I think. I think it would be appropriate for you to read it again, because you see the difference. There's a parallel between Rastafarianism, or well, let's say Rastafari and Christianity,
mm-hmm.
as there is between Christianity and Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
The Jew says that the Messiah has not yet arrived.
Mm-hmm.
The Christian says that the Messiah has come,
mm-hmm.
but the Christian is awaiting the second coming.
The
Rastafarian accepts the first coming, but also acknowledge the second coming in the personification of His Imperial Majesty.
Yeah.
So that parallel exists. Your poem will be appropriate input at this time.
Yes, this poem is from a king. To the kings of kings, from a king, King Dadamak. The writer for this poem is named King Dadamak. He's still living, still, you know.
Yes.
Christ return. But if the Savior should come back with hair and color of the black, would some still reject the spies with deed of hate and words of lies? We knew in heaven it's not so, the place where Christian hope to go. The Savior came and taught us love, and said there's unity above. The high, the low, the rich, the poor, each passes through the living door. There is no place for a class or race, for all our brother through His grace. A garden with all flowers white would be no beauty for the light. So we must learn to live on earth as sons and daughters of one birth. Whenever Jesus came again, the saints shall sing this new refrain, Jah, kings of kings and lords of lords, while hands and drums vibrate the chords. Arise and sing aloud, amen, for Jah is father of all men. His name all people shall adore and give him praises forevermore. Yes, sir, Adan.
Thank you very much for that input.
Yes, sir.
Take care of yourself, brother.
Hello.
Morning, my brother. How are you doing this morning?
Doctor.
Yes, sir.
Well, tune into your program and let me say this. I would like to say that my great Peter Tosh on the program.
Peter Tosh?
Yeah, Peter Tosh.
Yes.
The mystic man, Rastafari is.
Oh, yeah. I have that lined up to play.
Yeah.
Because that's a critical song. It's one of the most powerful albums Peter Tosh ever did.
And don't forget, he's the original.
Well, my role here is the host, you know. I'm to facilitate the discussion. I'm not here to impose any will.
No, I know that you're not trying to impose a will. What I'm saying is that I'd like to hear your point of view as a man who is in the religion, period.
No, again, it's just 1 minute after two, you see. My thing, it's important for us to get the discussion going. That's why we have a brother next to us here, who is from the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, who they present a specific point. The other guest, we should be on right after you, he will be speaking from the other side now, as a Rastafarian who defend the cause of Rastafari faith and present from the Rastafarian perspective what is his evidence that identify His Imperial Majesty as Christ in the Second Coming.
I would like to greet the guest on the program. Okay. And welcome.
Welcome, my brother.
Yeah, welcome. No first thing. No. So, as a member of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, and a man who is more or less in depth on all aspects of the African diet, is okay.
Yeah. Well, as I said before, I couldn't say that, because if I say he's alive and well in the flesh, I should tell you where he is, and I just can't. So I couldn't say that. I hope you follow through.
No, do a second question.
Yeah?
Do you worship His Majesty the King, Haile Selassie I, as a god?
As the god? I believe we are not understanding God in the true context, because God is creator of human. We are created by God, and therefore just to look at us human and say God full stop, I believe we are incorrect. I believe we are a little ignorant there of who God is, you know. So if you understand what I'm saying, then you'll understand my views on the...
Yeah, I understand your view. No, Mr. Seamatch.
Yes, sir.
Back to your program, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to your program a few times, and I've read your articles in the paper. By the way, why is it that all of a sudden your articles have stopped arriving?
At one point, the record had owed me money for 6 months. And I believe that there should be a significant relationship between income and output. And after a while, they started giving me all kind of bounce checks and all. So I figured that was total disrespect.
Well, it's the same thing with Peter Tosh and your money.
Yes, yes, so I just stopped, because what's the point?
I missed the article very much, because even that piece about the beauty contest and the dog show.
Give thanks, my brother. We hope to write again soon, but, you know, I have children to feed also, and for people to disrespect me and give me all kind of bounce check month after month and then tell me all kind of isms and schisms.
Well, I would have thought of the problem, you know?
Yes.
Because I missed the thing.
Yes, my brother.
No. And the program, no, I would like to see this discussion.
Yes.
And even this guy, Chizwom, I can't get Chizwom on the program in the night, yeah.
Well, he's not here. He's away now. We checked earlier, and he's away, because, you know, we would have, at some subsequent program, because he has a critical point of view in opposition to what is presented by the rest of the
I noticed that, and even some of those great guys with masters in theology, I don't know where they get them things from.
Yes.
Who believe that when Christ came here in the first coming, he took any of the scribes, so to speak, and taught them religion.
Yes.
He took up a little fisherman who I doubt if him could spell him name and teach him the greatest wonders on earth, which is to preach to fellow man and try to get a soul saved. So I would like to get some of them big at the band the program and maybe trash out certain things about them Christmas and Easter business.
Well, that's why we make sure that, you know, every religious junction, we reflect on it, we look at the significance of it, and we try to understand it in much deeper light. And that will come in due course, my brother. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, and before you go, as I said, Rastafari is Peter Tosh, okay?
Yes.
And black music by Muta Baruch, and your judgment. Enough things you're not doing in the world of conscious reggae music, okay? And I just hope you keep it up, all right?
We can't stop now.
Yeah, can't stop, because the struggle must go on.
But take care of yourself. It's 10 minutes after 2 o'clock. You're with the Night Doctor. We're at 68-631-62178. We're evaluating the contributions of Haile Selassie to world affairs and asking the question, who do you say that he is? Our first guest is Wolde Medin, a deacon in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. We now introduce our second guest. My brother, welcome on board. Hello?
Yes, my brother, give thanks.
Bringing you in via the transmission.
Night, doctor?
Yes, how are you doing this morning, my brother?
Well, we always have to give thanks and praise, you know, today being the 23rd of July.
Yes.
That's the birth of our Lord and Savior, Emperor Haile Selassie I, Jah Rastafari. And you know that this is the most holy of holies, you know, the most holy day in the Rastafarian calendar. In time to come, this will be one of the most holiest of days in terms of the world, and especially the black calendar. So we give thanks and praise unto the Most High for choosing this day to come upon creation, to open man and man eyes, and to reveal unto us the knowledge of the seven seals, which is the book of the prophecy. We always give thanks and praise unto the Most High. Jah Rastafari. Give thanks, my brother.
Welcome, my brother. The first part,
yes,
the His Majesty's contribution to world affairs. How do you see that?
Well, his contribution as a man, you know, is so many. Your Majesty, one must remember, you know, Ethiopia is really the last of the black kingdoms that have been able to maintain its independence and its dignity. And that has been perpetuated through the power and the glory of His Majesty. He maintained the African tradition. There was always a council of elders, which would be synonymous to like the Senate at this time. And there was always the elected representatives who would advise and assist in the administration of the country, which would be similar to like the House of Representatives. So he maintained, which is an ancient tradition in the entire Africa, and he maintained that in Ethiopia, and he further embodied that when he gave to the Ethiopian people a written constitution in 1955, and which was later amended many times so as to suit the needs of the country. So in terms of the administration of Ethiopia, the governing of it, the terms of bringing it into the modern era, all praise is due to their majesty. In terms of Africa itself, in terms of unity, the organization of the OAU, Organization of African Unity, formed in 1963 in Addis Ababa, is a fantastic milestone for African unity. It took a lot of maneuverings, a lot of skillful diplomacy on the part of their majesty, because there were many different factions at that OAU gathering, and people with diversified views and ideologies and religion. You had some who had a strong Islamic religion, you had some who had strong Christian beliefs, and within the Christian beliefs you had different Catholics veering from the others and so on. So it really took a lot on their majesty now to bring them all together, and in 1963 to form the Organization of African Unity. And that was a fantastic milestone. Also, it took a lot of traveling on his part to go throughout the African countries to speak to their respective governments to pave the way for Africa unity.
Some African thinkers...
Also, His Majesty, long before the whole anti-apartheid issue became fashionable,
yes,
His Majesty brought before the International Court of Justice the question of apartheid in South Africa and Namibia. And the World Court ruled 8-7 against their majesty when they took the point that their majesty, not being a South African nor a Namibian, he therefore had no locus standi. That means he had no authority in which to have brought the matter before the International Court of Justice. But it was a very narrow decision, 8-7, and it shows how backward they were at that time. These were some of the things that their majesty was doing, which the world was basically silent. In terms of world petitions going before the United Nations and so, Oh, their majesty not only facilitated Ethiopian petitions, but, for example, Marcus Garvey and the UNIA, not being a government as recognized by the United Nations, they were able to put forth a lot of their petition to the United Nations through the Ethiopian government. And all this was facilitated by their majesty. It is something that we Rastafarians are seeking to do at this time. We are trying to bring many issues before the International Court of Justice and before the United Nations, but they have blocked us each time by telling us that we have to bring it through a government.
Yes.
Naturally, Jamaican government won't facilitate us. So we have actually put the idea to emissaries of African governments and to see if we can get the petition before them through those governments. So it's numerous. These are just some of the many, my brother, in terms of his traveling through the earth, his representations before the World Council of Churches, his maintenance of international morality, the unprecedented speech made before the League of Nations, and so on. You know, it's absolutely fantastic the amount of work covered by their majesty as a human form.
Now, one of the other issues that we opened with this morning, the whole question of who do you say that he is? The deacon from the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, he expressed a point of view which affirms His Imperial Majesty as living a Christian life and being a Christian in all sense of the word. Now, how do you see this aspect of his existence?
The I Majesty is the living I am. He is the Almighty I. Within ancient times, at all time, you have always had the Father, the Son, and the Holy Mother. It is this Catholicism and Popeism that tell you about Holy Ghost. There's no ghost business. The Trinity, this is a black concept. It is the black church which gave to the world the idea of omnipotence, the one God concept. And out of that one God now, the one God has always manifested himself upon creation in the form of his Son. And that was long before Jesus, that idea manifested and was always held to. And then long before Jesus, and then Jesus himself as the returned Messiah upon creation. And then that's 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
And then within this time now, it is the I Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie, who has manifested himself within this time. Why I say this, if one recall in the book of Genesis, there was a time when Abraham looked up and he saw the Almighty walking towards him with his brethren. And Abraham asked Sarah to go and prepare meal and food for him and so on. And he came and he ate and dined with Abraham. And that was when he predicted that Sarah would have had a child. And he also showed Abraham that he was on his way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. That's in Genesis. That's a living example of the Almighty walking upon the earth in the form of his Son. And this was long before. This was roughly about 1,500, 2,000 years before Jesus Christus. So we have that example within the Bible. And then we had Jesus Christus. And then we have 2,000 years later, the I Majesty Emperor Haile Selassie walking in the form of the returned Messiah upon creation and as the Almighty I come to reveal the knowledge of the book of the seven seals unto man in this time. There's really no doubt about it, my brother. We know this is a fact. And one of the reasons why black people especially take so long to acknowledge this factor is simply because he has now trod the earth as a black man. Any of them trod as a white man, they would have cling to him long time. But because him trod as a black man, ordinary and simple, he came here that people could see him physically, directly. And this is one of the reasons black people just cannot conceptualize their God as being black. They just cannot conceptualize the Almighty as sitting in his omnipotence beneath the red, gold, and green throne as black, jet black, Jesse black, blacker black. And this is why enough of the pastors are able to trick our people by misleading them and telling them about God have no color, God is white, and these type of mysticism. There's no mysticism about it. It is spiritual naturality that the Almighty trod in the form that he has made his children with the first man upon creation has always been the black man. And this we know as a fact, and no, nothing upon earth can change this factor. If one checked the birth of their majesty when he was born, the spirituality which conceptualized it, there were 8 other children that his mother just could not carry. He was a 9th, and he was the only one to have survived. And immediately upon the earth, there was a lot of thunder and lightning and endless natural mystics took place. And rain had not fallen in Ethiopia for months, and immediately the clouds opened and a lot of rain started falling. That is the immediate at his birth at Harar in Ethiopia in 23rd of July, 1892.
Our brother here shook his head a while ago when you made one statement. My brother, is there any point that you wish to take issue with?
He shook his head a while ago at one of your statements. I'm going to ask him to clarify, you know, what he objects to or what he wished to clarify.
In that, to say that it was only one son of Ras Makanen who survived, I read the autobiography of His Majesty, and it said it was 2 sons who survived. I does not remember right now offhand the name of that other brother, but it was 2 sons that survived. This is from Ethiopian history.
Yes. Hello, Miguel? Hello?
Yes, I'm right here.
Did you hear his statement?
Yes.
I'm going to turn the delay down so it doesn't disturb you too much.
Yes.
Now,
what happened is I have difficulty hearing on the telephone.
Yes, I'm going to turn the delay down. So pretty soon it will match your voice on the radio. So you'll be hearing yourself at the same time. What he said, he says his readings have shown that there were 2 sons that survived. Not just one. You mentioned of the 9. Well, I've seen other places that says there were 10 births. But only he was the 10th child and the only one to survive. As opposed to the other 9 did not.
I wonder if he could give us the name of that one.
This is what I'm saying. I did not really come prepared for on that topic, or else I could, you know, research it and brought it along.
I am now looking at a family tree tracing the ruling house of Shua. The tree that I'm looking at, coming all the way from Solomon, coming right through to Negus Sahala Selassie, coming right through unto their majesty Emperor Haile Selassie. And that family tree which I am looking at right now doesn't have the mother having 2 children at all. Naturally, I am willing to learn.
I'm looking at one that says he was the only surviving child of the Ras Makonnen of the Shoan dynasty.
Yes.
Anything else you wish to comment on what Miguel spoke of?
Well, he had touched on some good points, really, and, you know, as a Rastaman, typical Jamaican, pursuing to regain his history, his culture, then I'm in agreement with him on a lot of the points, you know.
Yes.
There is the basic difference where he says he is Almighty God, and, you know, I'm going according to as Ethiopia teaches. That's just basic difference.
Yes. Miguel, it's he agrees with what you have said, except for the position of His Imperial Majesty being the Almighty.
A lot of people afraid to carry it to that higher level, you know. It's difficult to teach anyone that level. That is a spiritual, inborn, natural levity which is written upon the precepts of the heart and manifests upon the levity of creation. It's really difficult to really teach a man that. He must find that for himself. And when His Majesty used these words, when he said, "Come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Who can resist such an invitation so full of compassion? The words of Thy Majesty. So it will take a little time for everyone to manifest this natural liberty, you know. But my brother, within time, little by little, because one must remember, you know, when Jesus trod the earth, you know, he was not accepted either. They crucified him.
Yes.
They said no, they said all manner of things, and then they crucified him and put him away. It was only hundreds of years after that they actually acknowledged him at the different councils and conferences that they had and started to respect him, and that he grew in stature and magnified in glory. So usually, you know, people have great difficulty because they always say, "Boy, how can you praise a man as God. Okay, you know what I mean? Them always say these good things and so on, you know. So it take a little time for everyone to come to this glory and this fullness. You have some people have him as a great king. Some people have him as a mighty one. You know, all these things gradually will full up. But we as Rastafarians, and I would just like to say to my humble priest there that it's not a matter of just a Jamaican pursuing and trying to defend the principle of Rastafari. This is an international order. This is an international duty. And what we are saying now and what we as Rastafarians are manifesting is a world order. Why I say that? Because even His Majesty's members of the royal family who were exiled in all different parts of the world, in England, in America, and other places, Canada and so on, have come here and have acknowledged to us that there were times when they themselves shunned and were ashamed to be identified with His Majesty, and that during those times it was the Rastafarians who constantly bore that cross, who constantly bear the crown of thorns. And to this day now, there are many, many, many who is now jumping on this wagon. But we who have carried this cross and bear this tribulation have never ceased flying the red, gold, and green. Not just locally here, but internationally. And we know that within time, in 1992, we will celebrate the centenary of Thy Majesty's birth. And we know that by then there will be a mighty crescendo, a mighty development throughout the world, because this is what Rastafari is, the epitome of blackness. We are the leaders when it comes down to black dignity and black glory. Not coincidentally, because His Majesty maintained the traditional African empire throughout, when all the other empires in Egypt, in Mali, in Songhai, and all these other places, when they failed, Ethiopia maintained its dignified stand. And why did it do so? It did so that we here and throughout the world can feel proud and restore that black glory, that black history, that will make black people take its rightful place. I and I, the sons of Ham, shall take its rightful place as world leaders, and therefore international morality will be restored once more.
Brother Miguel, stand by, huh? We're gonna go to one of His Majesty's speeches, and we're gonna come back to you. We're gonna take some calls in between and get back to you.
Give thanks, my brother. Endless praise.
Stand by. It's now 29 minutes after 2 o'clock. You're with the Night Doctor live on RJR, the Supreme Sound, number one for 40 years. This morning we're raising the question, evaluating the contributions of Haile Selassie to world affairs, and who do you say that he is? One of the things it says here that one of the major internal obstacles to His Majesty's work in Ethiopia was the Ethiopian clergy themselves, which I say was very powerful and ultra-conservative. And it is said they were very eager to keep people in ignorance to serve their own end. The venality and the superstition of this clergy was amazing. Today, like the clergy of the Middle Ages, it opposed to all scientific innovation and progress, and even modern methods of healing. Deacon, is this any relevance to that? In terms of the present Ethiopian
yes,
church?
What I'd like to ask, that book that you have read from, is
yes.
It an Ethiopian writer or it's a Western writer?
He's an African writer. Rogers, this is from Rogers. It was written in 1936.
Uh-huh.
This is a, you know, very old.
Mm-hmm.
From 1930, J.A. Rogers, who done a lot of research involved in terms of the black culture and so on. And this is back in 1936. He's looking at that time at the Ethiopian Orthodox, the church, the clergy, in terms of their practices then. So clearly things could have been quite different now.
Yeah, well, definitely that's a fact. But, you know, I'm always very sort of timid, so to speak. I like to read other writers, whether they are Europeans, writing about Africa.
Yes.
I always try to read between the lines, because it must be fully borne in mind that African history, African culture is of Africa.
Yes.
European history, European culture is of Europe. Asiatic history and culture is of Asia.
Yes.
And each person sees things from their own perspective.
But here he also says that it talks about the back in 1936 here now, that worked under Canada's advantage. He instituted a parliament, a modern court system, built roads, hospitals, schools, installed electric lighting in the streets, improved the commerce and international relations, all the while steering a diplomatic course between opposing faction and the religions of his own land.
Yes. Well, this is partially true in that Ethiopia, because of the invasion of these European powers, Ethiopia was locked away from the rest of the world. And when she was locked away, it's like she had retarded her growth. When she was coming back in the world and the rest of the world was more advanced technologically, then they were looking on Ethiopia as, you know, blaming Ethiopia, but Ethiopia had preserved her integrity during those dark ages.
Yes.
And we need to take that in perspective also.
All right, stand by. Let's take two calls and then come back. 68631, good morning.
Yeah, morning.
Yes, my brother.
You made a comment there about a parliament, Selassie instituting a parliament.
Yes, well, one of our guests, Mr. Lorne, on the other line, he talked about in 1955, His Majesty gave a written constitution to Ethiopia, which was further modified, and he started a system of a modern system of justice also.
Okay, but what was the political scene like in, for example, was he an absolute, well, just how much power did he wield, and how much power did the parliament wield, or was there a plurality of views or anything like that?
Yes. Stand by. Let me go to our legal expert on that. You hold on. We'll come right back to you on that. Hello?
Yes, my brother.
You heard that question a while ago?
Yes, I heard the question.
Yes, could you clarify for him?
Please? Certainly. There was no absolute monarch in Africa, you know. Throughout Africa, the traditional African empires, there's always a council of elders. It is from the African system that the Western system has adopted its idea of a senate and a representative. You always had the council of elders who more or less advises, and which advice was greatly respected. Then you had the actual council itself now, which administrates, which was like the elected representatives. So you have always had that. Now, His Majesty, they had elections in Ethiopia. They had elections, nothing like the madness that we have here in Jamaica, you know, where you have two parties and the killings and so on. No, what you had was the different provinces and persons now within that province who feel that they can make a contribution in the administration and governing of the country would put up themselves. So in some provinces you would have 10 people, 20 people, in some you'd only have two, or in some you'd only have one. Then when the persons who put up themselves now, they go around and they would have, you know, I don't like to use the word campaign, but they would go around and, you know, present themselves, present their credentials, present their brochures, and, you know. And then the people would vote in that province. They would vote for the person who they think is the best man. And the person who gets the most vote would come out as the representative now of that particular province. And then you add all the provinces, the representative from all the provinces now would sit in what, for clarity for our listeners to understand, would what like a House of Assembly now. And there now, and they would actually carry out a lot of the functioning. What had happened to a lot of these people now was that they depended so much on their Majesty, they put all the work on him.
Yes.
And when other ministers should be functioning, they neglected their duties and he had to take up that call. But he personally took the portfolio of Minister of Education, which is so unlike many other world leaders now. They always take the finance, you know what I mean? So in terms of power, it was seriously, and a power sharing device where there was, and he was not absolute monarch as many people tried to make it. He himself would have always wanted to divest whenever it is getting too close to make him that absolute monarch.
The one in the same book by Rogers points out that there was a terrific strain on him in terms of this little man. Even he went for days without sleep. Even while he was eating, he transacted state business because of the weight of the state. He had one of his assistants who slept, his secretary slept at the foot of his bed, ready at any minute the emperor may wake up and remember something from the previous day which wasn't done, which had to be taken care of before the next day. So what we're seeing is somebody who barely over 5 feet tall and weighed about 120 pounds, but just that the level of commitment and work that he was responsible for was phenomenal. Stand by, let's go back to our call, other caller. My brother?
Yeah, hello.
Did you hear that response?
Yeah, I heard. Just a few, about two or three other points to clarify.
Yes.
I remember reading some years ago that he had manipulated his way to the throne.
Uh-huh.
That there was at least one other person there who had, let's say, a superior claim to the throne, and that he had conspired to have him, well, let's say, detained or something like that.
Yes.
What's the comment on that?
All right. Go ahead, stand by.
Yes, I should put it that the name is Ligiasu.
Is the other contender for the throne?
Yes, Ligiasu was named to the throne, was crowned. But as I mentioned before, this chap Ligiasu was the son of one Ras Michael. And he, after succeeding the throne, he thought life was going to more earthly standard, which was not befitting the Ethiopian monarchy. Plus, he was getting in close company with an opposing religion, the Muslim religion. And the Ethiopians are the one who decided that they did not want such a leader. And they are the one who overthrew Ligiasu and summons then Rastafari to take up rulership in Ethiopia.
So
after Ligiasu was overthrown, Ras Michael with Ligiasu built an army and came against him. Ligiasu was then defeated and was put in exile.
So in 1917, he fled and lay hidden for 4 years before he was captured and imprisoned. In fact, rebellion actually broke out in Ethiopia in 1916 because of charges made against Ligiasu about charges of immorality, forsaking the state religion, and also mismanagement of state affairs. So a popular rebellion rose up against him, and ultimately in 1917, when he fled, 4 years later, he was captured and imprisoned.
Okay, another point. From what I read, the emperor had a very close relationship with the United States for most of his rule. Well, certainly since the Second World War. Right. Ethiopians fought in the Korean War on the side of the United States, and the United States armed to a certain extent and trained Ethiopia's army. Given what we know of America's, let's say, behavior during that period, how was that justified?
The connection between Ethiopia and the United States?
Yeah.
All right, you stand by. Hello?
Yes, right here.
Yes, any comments on the Ligiasu connection or the connection between Ethiopia and America post-World War II?
Yes, I think the Ligiasu question has been answered adequately, you know, in terms of he seeking to lead a deeply religious kingdom into Islam and Arabs, you know, they were really influencing him, and that was not tolerated by the people. That will not be tolerated at any time at all, not even until this day. And consequently, he was removed from the throne. But it was not just a matter of removal, you know. When an Ethiopian monarch is crowned, he takes an oath. And one of those oaths is to uphold the ancient Christian principles. And therefore, when you break that oath, automatically you know that you no longer can sit on the throne. So his own behavior made it impossible for him to continue as the head of state of the country. As pure as that, he had broken his own oath. And consequently, His Majesty now was asked, as the defender of that faith, to not only defeat him, but to take over
And he also, being of royal lineage, became emperor, first became King Negus, and then later on crowned emperor in 1930.
Yes.
In relation to his foreign policy, vis-a-vis the United States and so on, His Majesty made it very clear that Ethiopia had no godfather, and Ethiopia was, to a letter, non-aligned. So consequently, he dealt with United States, he dealt with the Soviet Union, he dealt with China, he visited all these places, and at no time did Ethiopia, one could see where, like for example, you see how Jamaica tied up with IMF and America and the whole heap of aid and the whole heap of loan and so,
yes.
At no time Ethiopia got such things, because His Majesty would not have mortgaged his country, anticipating full well the future and the future generations, and knowing only too well that these people will gladly give you aid so that later on they can come in and they can take over a dam, they can take over part of your territory and so on. As a matter of fact, when the problems came up between Ethiopia and Italy, Britain had the audacity to suggest to their Majesty that he gave a part of the Wollo province so as to bring peace, and His Majesty made it very clear that that's impossible, that he would never contemplate doing such a thing, as that would be treacherous to his forefathers if he considered giving up a piece of Ethiopia to the Italians so as to bring peace. So that was the position of Ethiopia, non-alignment. Although we deal with people, we talk to people, we communicate, and if we see a just cause, we will be along with you. But certainly overall, at no time could the Americans or the Russians or the Chinese or anyone else say, look, I have a foothold in Ethiopia. So, and when one compares it now with the way Mengistu has mortgaged the country in order to get the amount of arms that he has got, then one could see the definite, clear position that their Majesty took during his governorship of Ethiopia.
Well, one thing again, checking on my documents here, it says that the Ethiopian coin at the time was quite unstable, being of silver and in small value in the purchase of modern implements in the gold standard country. Further, such reform were usually effected by foreign loans, but Ethiopian policy was not to borrow from abroad. And since Haile Selassie knows that the first step towards losing his independence would be to owe money to Europe or America, money to carry out his reform has been and still is his great handicap. So I must say he refused to be beholden to either Europe or America in order to bring about the changes that he wanted to see in the country.
Definitely.
Yes.
And also, when he came to Jamaica here and he gave them the money to build a school, the Haile Selassie school, it wasn't just supposed to be a school, you know, it was supposed to be an entire complex, teacher training, university, and all these things, primary, tertiary, and all these things. And he brought gold bars and gave to the Jamaican government here.
Yes.
So it wasn't just some ordinary little trinkets that was brought and presented. You're talking about solid gold, and up to this day, the government hasn't really accounted to us as to what was the value of these bars.
We need to investigate that.
Yes.
Yes.
I tried some time ago, you know, and I was really giving around the bush thing. Up to now, they would even tell us where it is.
Deacon, any
you know,
any
so on, you know, we don't know what might happen if we investigate this thing too deep, you know, another
Jack Smith. Man, we have to lock up some more.
It's inevitable, you know.
Yes.
It's inevitable, my brother. Justice must come to these people the same way you imprisoned the grab chain youth and the man who, you know, thief because I'm hungry. Said we have to deal with these people, my brother. It's inevitable. It's just a matter of time.
Yes.
And we must commend the judge who took that stand.
Yes. Walde, any knowledge of this?
Well, I does not venture where I'm not an authority. And this had we like to leave for more authoritative person to
deal with this one.
However, I'd like to take the opportunity to point out here, it's a part of the Ethiopian tradition to promote school and church, that wherever there is a church,
Ethiopian
ever try to get a school. It was mentioned early on that I'm from the Maxfield Avenue branch. It's really not so. I am from the St. Tekle Imanot branch in Bull Bay. And there we have a school struggling with, have no godfather to aid us, but we are still keeping the school alive. It's really a basic school, but we have been 8 years in operation, and it is only, say, two months that we have ceased operation, and was the 2 months following the
Gilbert
episode.
Yes. All right, Brother Miguel, stand by.
Yes.
My brother.
Yeah, I heard all of that.
But, I trust you have more questions still?
Yeah, a few more. Just a comment on that. I don't think they really answered the question, because from what I read, the I don't know about economic aid, but the military aid by the United States to Ethiopia, or, well, whether it was aids or loans or whatever, was substantial. In fact, the Americans had basing rights, naval visiting rights in Ethiopia.
Yes.
Right. All right, let me move on to the next question of Eritrea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I understand it, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Eritrea was once an Italian colony.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Up to a period. And then it was taken over by Ethiopia. Was it early 60s, I think?
No, I don't know the exact date that Italy was driven out of Eritrea. Do you have a memory on that?
Yes, it's interesting. Italy, how come that Italy have a colony in Africa?
In African soil.
Eh?
But what's your question? Go with your question.
What
first.
I was wondering is what's the historic link between Eritrea and Ethiopia that justified the emperor seizing it or taking it over, mm-hmm, once the Italians had left?
I'd like to say that Eritrea, it's a part of Ethiopia. The Italians are concentrated in Eritrea, and this is why this continuous war with Eritrea and Ethiopia continues, because the Italians are in Eritrea trying to support a separation whereby they could set up a full colony there. But this is not according to the Ethiopian people.
When was it a part of Ethiopia? Was it under Menelik II or what?
But it continually, Eritrea is a part of Africa, and the entire Africa at one point, the entire Africa at one point in time was called Ethiopia. So when, how are we going to separate it now?
No, but the reality is that you have 50 odd countries in Africa. I mean, that's the reality of it, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, what's called Eritrea was part of Ethiopia prior to the Italian intervention, and the emperor then took it back over once the Italians left. Well, fine, but was it ever, what I'm trying to find out, was it ever a part of the country we know today as Ethiopia, or the Ethiopian Empire?
From what I read, this is so. It has always been a part of the geographical era known as Ethiopia.
Why were the Eritreans fighting against the emperor then?
The motivation by the Italians supports these people to continue fight, because they want a separation. They would like to be independent of the main ruling of Ethiopia. The main ruling of Ethiopia does not, and they are fighting that this should not be.